If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. I have a very, very special guest for today's episode. He's a very, very dear friend of mine. We met while we were both working at Cantor Fitzgerald, and we have remained friends ever since. He's an amazing, amazing individual, and you're going to hear his 9/11 story today. So buckle up, and you know it's going to be a great interview. Let me tell you a little bit about my friend Harry Weiser. Harry received a BS in accounting from Brooklyn College in 1976. He got a CPA in 1978 and his JD from Fordham Law School, cum laude, of course, in 1982. From 1975 to 1981, Harry worked as a revenue agent for the IRS. You know, those are the people that most normal people hate. After that, Harry was an associate at the law firm of Debevoise and Plimpton and counsel at Friedman, Kaplan & Seiler. Harry joined Cantor Fitzgerald in 1996 as tax counsel, responsible for the firm's worldwide tax planning. He also holds those positions at BGC Partners and Newmark, two publicly listed companies controlled by Cantor. Harry has been a partner at Cantor Fitzgerald since 1997. He has served or is currently serving on the boards of the Jewish Reconstructionist Federation, the Hillel at Brandeis, where he also served as president and board chair, Bet Am Shalom Synagogue, where he also served as financial vice president and then president, Westchester Jewish Council, Westchester Children's Association, where he serves as treasurer, and the Lorraine O'Brien Foundation. He also served on the board and as treasurer of his homeowners association at South Pond Farm in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, where he has a second home. Harry also volunteers as an assistant chaplain at White Plains Hospital. He and his wife, Karen, have lived in Edgemont since 1995, where they raised their three children. Please help me welcome Harry Weiser. Harry, how are you?
As I said before, I can't complain.
It's been a long time. How's the family?
It's been a long time. Family's good, you know, all grown up.
Yeah.
Karen and I are empty nesters, have been for some years now.
Wow, that's awesome. What are you kids up to these days? I didn't realize. Married, single, working?
Still single, one in a serious relationship, two still looking.
Yeah.
And two in D.C., one in Manhattan.
Wow. What are they doing?
We have a lawyer.
An shocker economist, there. Shocker there. Yeah.
An economist and a late bloomer still trying to find herself.
Oh, okay.
Finishing up college late. Went back to college after a little bit of a gap and is now really doing well.
Wow. So you know, better late than never. Let me tell you something. Sometimes, you know, it takes people time to realize, you know, or they need to mature. Okay. I know that. I always tell people when I went to college, I wasn't ready for college. All right. I wasn't mature enough for college and it showed in the first couple of years, but it got better. So, you know, I'm glad that she took the hiatus. You said, right?
Yes.
I'm glad she took the hiatus. And now, you know, she's probably a different person going back with a different mindset. And right. I'm sure she's going to be great. All right. I know her father. I know a little bit about her mother, but I certainly know her father very well. So I have very, very high hopes for her. How's that?
As do we. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, let's get started. You know, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling you what the right thing to do is, and they represent the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things we go through in life. Now, we all know that there are many ups and downs in life and many bumps in the road or bricks that we get hit with. On the surface, as I read your bio, you seem to have had a great life and a great career. But as I said, every so often, life throws a brick at us. My biggest brick was 9/11, and the whispers helped me through my miraculous escape. You as well were hit with a huge brick on 9/11, certainly worse than mine. My audience already knows my story. Now they'd like to hear your story. So please take us back to that day. Tell us what was going on.
It's been a while. It's funny. I haven't told this story in some time. So I was on my way up to my office that day. My office was on the 104th floor. And for those who know the Trade Center, it had a series of elevators. I would take the large elevator up to the sky lobby on the 78th floor, get off and switch to a smaller elevator that would go up to my office floor. And I was in that second elevator when the plane hit the tower. Of course, I didn't know what was happening. All I knew was that the elevator suddenly shook and then started plummeting. And as it was plummeting, I could see sparks through the gap in the door as I imagine the elevator was hitting against the concrete walls of the outside elevator shaft. And then it burst into flame. By the way, you know, I'm going to give you this with what sounds like timing. I can't talk about timing because
it all
happened in slow motion and yet all at once.
Right. I get it because, you know, when I tell my story and people ask me how long it take you to get down, I go like, I don't know. And they look at me like I'm crazy. What do you mean you don't know? You know, so I hear it. All right. And I think most of my audience understands that, you know, when you go through something like that, it's not about the timing. It's not about what happened when. It's just about the entire experience. So your elevator was actually going up. Correct.
It was
when
going
the plane
up.
Hit. You're already in, as opposed to like the elevator that Virginia was on, and everybody knows in my audience, they all know who Virginia was. The elevator that Virginia was on didn't start moving yet. All right. She was lucky in that sense. So yours, okay, so now you're going up like you normally would, and all of a sudden the plane hits, you don't know what it is. The entire elevator shakes like crazy, all right, and then all of a sudden starts to plummet down. Okay, go ahead.
It bursts into flames. The carpeting on the floor is burning. And I had a cloth briefcase with me and I start beating at it, trying to put it out. And it does go out. The emergency brakes must have caught because it's no longer plummeting. It's now coming down smoothly. And all of a sudden, the fireball came in through that gap in the doors. And the fireball just caught me right in the face.
Oh, my God.
Sudden. I mean, just it was there. It hit and it was gone. And the elevator came to the sky lobby, 78th floor. The doors opened about 6 inches off the floor, but just a short drop to the floor. There was a woman in the elevator with me. She was behind me, and she and I both got off and started walking, looking for a stairwell. Again, no idea what had happened, but we knew something had happened and that this was not time to get in another elevator. And to show how strangely the mind works, I had no idea how badly hurt I was. I had my briefcase. It had some papers. It had my Palm Pilot, if you remember those.
Oh, my God.
I walked over to the side of the elevator. I put it down. I said, I probably shouldn't carry this. I'll come back and get it later. You know, that's the way you're thinking. It's just, this is happening, but it's who knows? You know, you try to have a sense of normalcy. Yeah. I walked to the fire stairs. We walked to the fire stairs and started walking.
Now, let me stop you.
Already filled with people.
Let me stop you for just a second. When you say the fire stairs, You got out on, because I know the layout. So you got out of the elevator, right? You walked towards the big hall, right? Yeah. And then which stairwell did you take? Do you remember?
I can tell you that facing the big elevator,
right?
System, I turned left.
You turned left. Yes. Okay. All right. So with me, it was the other way around. Facing the elevator system, I turned right. But we'll get to, but people, nobody cares about me right now. Okay. So please continue. I'm sorry for stopping you.
Oh, of course we care about you. We started walking down. The stairwell was already filled with people at that point. And I started asking people in a fairly loud voice to step aside and let us down more quickly because I knew we needed to get help.
Right.
And I remember, I mean, it was very orderly. And faces would turn towards me, you know, wondering who is this disruptive person? And, you know, the expression, seeing their jaw drop?
Yeah.
I was watching jaws drop, so I have no idea what I looked like.
Right.
But I knew I must look like something.
Yeah.
And in fact, at one point, I reached for the banister. And I noticed my right arm, I had short sleeves. I noticed that I had this big flap of skin hanging down. And I said, okay, just don't look. I looked at my feet. I said, put your feet down, one in front of the other. Just walk. Somewhere maybe a third of the way down, we ran into a firefighter. And not in full garb, but wearing those big boots on his way up. He turned around with us and he started clearing a path for us to come down behind him. We made it to the sky lobby, to the regular lobby. And it was a chaotic scene. You know, at this point it was filled with firefighters, other first responders, it seemed to me just running back and forth. And people getting out, we were guided towards the Church Street exit. Firefighter was still with us. There were ambulances there, he wanted to put me in an ambulance. The ambulances were all full. Somebody else took charge of the other woman, so she went separately. I walked with him to Broadway looking for an ambulance. Didn't find one, came back to Church Street. We found an empty one. He helped me settle in. I was on adrenaline. I mean, I was on pure adrenaline at this point. They put me in the ambulance. They put me on my back. I could see through the windows at the top of the ambulance as buildings went by. And at that point, I started feeling it, and I started shaking. And I actually didn't feel hot. I felt cold. I was having some sort of reaction. I got to Weill Cornell.
Yeah, can I stop you for just one second?
Sure.
When you got into that ambulance, all right, did they have to put other people in there? Did they wait, or did they just take you alone?
They took me alone and immediately.
Uh-huh. Because the reason I ask is when I got Virginia into the ambulance wouldn't leave until they filled up with people. So even though she was writhing in pain and she had third degree burns, you know, they weren't leaving. And they said, we can't leave until we fill the ambulance. Ultimately, they did, obviously. And that's another whole story. But that's why I asked the question because with Virginia, they made her wait, and which was horrific. But OK, I'm sorry. Continue, please.
I wonder if because of the delay, you know, walking to Broadway, walking back, I missed the rush hour, if you want a better word. But they took me up to New York Presbyterian, which has a burn center. So I was very fortunate that way. I went to one of the few burn centers in Manhattan. they spoke to me. They told me that they needed to cut off my clothes. I said, do what you have to do. I asked them to call me, Karen, to call my wife. And I gave them her phone number. And then they said, we're going to need to intubate you. And again, I just said, do whatever you need to do. It's the last thing I remember for about 7 weeks.
Seven weeks?
Yeah. I know from the story being filled in by others after the fact that they kept me in an induced coma. I was very badly burned. My body wasn't that badly burned, maybe 30%. But I had burns on the lungs, the fireball that I mentioned.
Yeah.
Actually went into my mouth and down my trachea and into my lungs.
That I guess that accounts for the hoarseness in your voice, because you never used to say you didn't sound like this before 9/11.
No, I know. My vocal cords were burned, and they're now partially paralyzed.
Wow.
And the lungs were burned and infected. They got infected. And that was the real danger, the infections in the lungs. And I had some blood infections, and I had other things that went on during those 7 weeks and after. And I also, you can probably hear my voice, because my vocal cords are scarred, they're partially paralyzed. I expel a lot of air when I talk, which means that I can't speak sequentially for a long period of time. I have to stop and catch my breath. Okay. But it's fine. It's not painful. It's something I need to do.
All right. So we'll brace for that. All right. You just let us know. Put your hand up when you have to stop, and we'll let you stop.
or I'll just stop. I can do that. Sometimes intentionally and sometimes
not.
So I woke up slowly. I mean, I didn't wake up all at once. And I remember seeing, you know, I would wake up, I'd be half dazed, I would see faces, usually Karen's, nurses, doctors. I know I had some hallucinations when I was under, dreams, if you will, but I know I had one where I swore the doctors were trying to kill me. I had one where apparently I woke up long enough to tell Karen that the doctor was a drug kingpin and they needed to keep him away from me.
Now you remember that, or Karen told you that you said that?
I remember the first. The first one was pretty frightening. Karen told me about the second. I remember once waking up in the middle of the night and my nurse was there doing some sort of preparation. My nurse was an ex-Navy man, just big and burly. And he was doing something with some sort of small sheets. And so I woke up to the sight of this big burly man at the foot of my bed, draping some sheets. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm being prepped for a sacrifice. You know, the mind does strange things.
Oh, without a doubt.
Happily, I was wrong. He was actually a wonderful nurse. As I said, I gradually woke up. The first day that I was fully awake, I wanted to know what had happened. And Karen was there, and I asked her. And she had decided in advance that she was going to spoon feed me information. She was going to answer questions, but nothing more. So I said, I asked what happened. She said, you were burned in a fire. I asked, was it a bomb? Because the Trade Center had that history.
Right.
And so she told me about the jet. I asked how many died. And she gave me the then number, which happily was exaggerated. They still thought at that point that it was 5,000. They still hadn't done the count properly. And then I started naming names. I asked about individuals. And there was a lot of, they didn't make it. I mean, most of my department, most of my closest friends and colleagues did not.
You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and my name is Ari Schoenbrunn. You've just heard the end of part one of this amazing interview with Harry Weiser. Stay tuned, coming soon, part two. And until that time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.